Hello again, and welcome to another episode of BitNote. This is David Collins. We'll be playing some great selection of video game music. Stay tuned and hope you enjoy. Hey all, and I've got a good show lined up for you. In this episode, I'll be starting what's going to be the first part of a four-part kind of series covering that game company. Yes, that game company. I'm not referring to a specific, that's their name, that game company. All one word. It's very, very awkward. But essentially, they made a lot of good quality games, tend to be a bit more artistic and emotive as well. I'll cover that in a bit, but before that, I'm going to cover one of my favorite earlier PC games, which I actually didn't even play until over a decade after being released. But the fact that I still loved it shows that, you know, sometimes old games, sometimes you love them because of nostalgia, and sometimes you love them because when you played it back then, you were young and you didn't know that much. But sometimes you love an old game because it's great. It does things that even modern games don't let you do, and it just has a power and sense and atmosphere that maybe games came after it, you know, took their own notes from, but still is beautiful in its wealth, and I just love it on its own merits. The game I'm talking about is System Shock. Not System Shock 2, the first one. System Shock, released originally for the DOS in the early 90s. I am going to play some music from that, the intro theme, to just get us all in the mood and talk about the game afterwards. But to put the plot simply, you are a lone hacker aboard a space station going up against a rogue AI. But more importantly than that, you're not just in a random space location, but you're dealing through a living, breathing environment that sometimes lives and breathes a little more than you'd really want it to. I'll start off with the intro theme and talk a bit more about the game afterwards. But yes, System Shock, definitely brilliant. That is the intro theme for System Shock. System Shock was developed by Looking Glass, and the music was composed by Greg Lopiccolo and Tim Rise. So, what exactly happens in System Shock? Well, you are a hacker, and you hack a company because it's, you know, the early 90s. You know, it's how the early 90s depicted the future. So, you know, of course we... Okay, I was about to say, of course, you know, they had a very, you know... They had a very, like, you know, rose-tinted view of hackers back then. It was seen as cool and exciting. And I was going to say about how the future didn't turn them out that way. But then I thought of, like, people like Eric Snowden and Bradley Manning and realized, boy, that people with technical knowledge, I mean, they technically weren't hackers. They just had access to materials and used it. But I'm just going to abort this line of conversation. But the fact is, you are how the early 90s imagined hackers in the future, being this really cool dude who goes around. You hack one company, they manage to trace it back to you, so you're not good, but then they employ you. Basically, the CEO of the company says, listen, go to the space station we have, take out the morality of core of this AI thing that's controlling the space station, and I'll reward you with this really cool, basically make you a cyborg kind of thing by hooking all these electronics up into your brain that'll let you do really, really cool stuff. So you, like any good geek who really, really likes cool, shiny, techie gadget gizmos, accept the offer, go up, do everything you want, and then you spend 6 months, you get the surgery that puts the computers in your head, and then you go to sleep for 6 months while you recover. When you wake up, you find what every single person playing the game could predict it would have happened, that maybe an AI without a morality center would not exactly be the most conducive to a well-running space station, and you find you're more or less, not quite, effectively the only live person left on the ship. Mutants are basically going, people are being mutated, others are being killed, and all the computers like systems are now turned against you. The entire space station has basically been turned into a gauntlet, a battleground, where basically everything is trying to kill you, a running theme in many video games, and you basically trying to figure out what to do. Thankfully, some people from Earth manage to get into contact with you and say, listen, we know about your deal and all that sort of illegal stuff, but we don't really care about that right now because the AI that's on the station you're in is just trying to kill all of humanity. And that starts your epic quest in order to survive the damn space station, in order to actually defeat the alien menace and, you know, get old systems back and hopefully survive as a result. And that, my friends, is how System Shock begins, and trust me, there's quite a few more turns and twists before this story comes to its completion. So, of course, that might sound like a great movie summary, but in terms of the game, how does it play? Well, it's a very like early 3D game in the early 90s. Back then, the early 3D meant two things. One, it would be very primitive even by today's standards. There are ways you can download mods and, you know, user-made stuff that improves it, but it still kind of looks pretty primitive. But at the same time, at the same time, back then, people didn't have quite a defined idea of what to use 3D for, so it tended to be more imaginative and take more or less interesting turns. The space station you're on has several levels, and each of them have got a specific function, and generally everything's pretty well ordered. And one thing I kind of like about the game is that the setting is very, very compact. You're kind of edging along. It's not like even its sequel, for instance, where you're running down a corridor and opening to this big thing and like running through great big hallowed walls. In System Shock, every step kind of matters. You can rush a bit, but then you might run into the view of a robot. But at the same time, if you're cautious, you can do it. You're like taking cautious steps, but still with a good pace. And it's just there's so many areas and nooks and crannies and everything to explore. It's got like maps and everything. But this comes up to one of the great things about it. The game is just very powerful. Like even modern first-person shooters, you've got an objective or possible more than one objective to get to. But you can still kind of explore the whole area and environment and like take diversions and like pick up items from here and there. I remember one time like I went to a deck I wasn't supposed to and managed to grab some extra special items that I wasn't meant to get until later in the game. But the game let me do that because why the heck not? Why restrict you? They told me I was meant to go to the other deck. It's my own decision if I go to a deck I wasn't meant to and then manage to get some stuff and save me more trouble later, so all the more power to me. But the game also is powerful, not in a lot of other respects. There's the atmosphere, there's the fact that the enemy AI called Shodan is basically omnipresent, taking control of monitors and everything and speaking to you over the loudspeaker and calling you a pathetic hacker and, you know, treating to you. It's the whole thing of an omnipresent AI is something that, of course, other games have adapted, such as the Portal series which, of course, also had their own female-voiced malevolent AI who was apparently trying to kill you but not doing a terribly good job of it. But also, as you make your way through it, there's that omnipresent thing. You've also got the voice communications. And as you're making through, it also pioneers a lot of audio logs, where basically you'd find a dead body somewhere, you'd pick up their audio log they had on you, and they'd hear them recite their last thoughts or ideas. Or basically, the stage, as has become a trope in video games, there was a lot of people on the ship. They've all pretty much died, but you do manage to find that they were all compulsively addicted to dictaphone machines and narrating their thoughts in the form of audio logs. This kind of seems a bit contrived, but when you can play them and as you walk around the space station, start playing these logs, hearing them talk about in the background, you start to form a gradual idea of what the heck is going on and what you've led yourselves into. And then, of course, there's also the obvious things where you listen to an audio log and they'll happen to reveal a combination lock to some little locker somewhere that reveals goodies. So there's always that. But yeah, I mean, the game also just has a lot of good moves. And before I talk a bit more, I think I want to just take a quick break for something. As you've heard, it has a very, like, you know, techie, electronic, synthesizing, depressing thing. And the game environments are kind of dark and malevolent and sterile. But then you jump into the elevator and, well, this music plays. Yeah, I love the fact that games can do it, can take twists like that. I think the elevator music has been used in other things as well, but obviously it had a common inspiration. But System Shock did have a lot of influence, everything from the modern BioShock games, which are meant to be spiritual successors, to, of course, Deus Ex, which had its own set of influences. But one of the things I really like about the game is it just, like I said, it gives you a lot of power over your environment. Your computer that's now in your head in the game gives you a full heads-up display, and it is powerful. You're able to do so much stuff. You're able to pick up pretty much any item. You're able to aim any weapon in pretty much any direction. You often have to get extra upgrades to monitor enemies and see if you can actually, if your weapons are doing an effect, because different weapons affect different enemies. You're racing through. You're avoiding power cores as well, and there's definitely a diverse amount of environments, but you get a lot of power-ups, and this is really cool. You get stuff like jetpacks and damage indicators and all this sort of stuff, so you're really upgrading. You even get some ones that are slightly pointless, but you like anyway. Like, one of my favorites in this category is you get a rear-view mirror. Literally. You install the upgrade, and suddenly, if you look at the top of the screen, you can see what's right behind you, and I loved it like that. Of course, I think it took up too much power. All the upgrades take up a bit of power, so I didn't really use it that much, but I just love that sort of sense that they're having fun with it. Indeed, you've actually got your computer interface, which manages all this stuff, even has its own game system. So you can basically play a game, and then while you're saying, okay, I'm getting a little tired of, like, shooting through all these enemies, I know, I'll play a video game. So you open up your interface and start playing Pong in your video game, or Breakout, and, you know, try to move the paddle back and forth and bounce the balls at the bricks. So you're playing a video game, and inside that video game, you're playing a video game. Lots of fun. You see, this is exactly good game design, because the developers know that if people are playing a video game, then they'd like to put video games. So if they put video games inside video games, everybody is happy. And there's just so much you could actually do with this, with the game. You can take grenades, of course. Maybe you want to set them and attach to them something as proximities, or maybe you want to throw them. And maybe you can get some really cool stuff, like something will make you run really, really fast. And another thing will make, like I said, you get a jetpack. And then at one stage, you've got this thing where you can get from one platform to another, but it's surrounded by, like, a tunnel of these little things, and if you hit the spheres, you lose the power, so you'll fall. So you have to decide whether you're going to try to, like, jetpack across, or, you know, try to find a more roundabout route that will lower the bridge. The game just throws you with a lot of different scenarios and different situations, and it's kind of like working it out. I like games like this. I like games like New Zealand Story, where, you know, you just jump and shoot, and it's a fun game, and you have a lot of fun and go through crazy environments. But I also like games like System Shock, where it's a kind of a complex system, but you work it out piece by piece, and gradually you develop more knowledge. And then when you got the power, you can do so much stuff. Because this is one of the earlier games where the developers were thinking so many cool stuff to the game, and they managed to shove it all in. There is one other thing I probably should let you know in case anyone tries out to go and buy this game. The controls are kind of horrendous. I mean, I mean that in the nicest way possible. These days, there's a common control scheme called WASD used for first-person shooters. This game was made before that, and what's more, the game kind of is a mix between a first-person shooter and almost like a point-and-click adventure, in the fact that, you know, they want you to be able to, like, look around, but they also want you able to use the mouse in order to click on stuff. Now, it took years before, like, series like Penumbra and Amnesia kind of managed to do this smoothly in a way that didn't get going, but back then, switching between these two interfaces was kind of messy. What's more is, like I said, the keys are in different positions, And the actual full movement keys takes up like half the keyboard, just for movement and general stuff. I mean, it plays like a flight simulator, to be honest. It took me over an hour before I finally got familiar with it. I had to force myself to get through it. I'm glad I did, though, because once I got it to grips with it more or less, I had a lot of fun. Cool, the recoil, the physics, the getting killed in the nuclear core of the space station, the story, the everything. But you've got to figure out like how to work half the keyboard. But you can do so much. You can like walk forward and backwards and crouch and crawl and even tilt side to side. And those are all things that later at first-person shooters kind of got and discarded and stuff. But it's just really cool to have it in this, to really know that they're really trying to transport you to that environment. And I think that's one of the reasons I like it. It gives you a lot of power. And even though with great powerful comes a lot of extra complexity. But there you go. Fun game. Like I said, it was System Shock by Looking Glass, and I played music by Greg LaPiccolo and Tim Rice. So, let's move on to the next game, shall we? And to take a complete jump from one PC classic game that was just powerful and edge-setting to actually another game that was edge-setting in its, you know, trending in its own right, but in a very different way. Yes, this is a game I'm talking about that it's our first part in a four-part special on that game company. And this is going to deal with their first game that was made before they were even that game company. It's called from a game called Cloud. At that time, they were just students from the University of Southern California. And the music you're about to hear is from Vincent Diamante, who played greater music in that. But essentially, they were trying to make a game that evoked feelings that were different from, you know, and emotions that weren't really represented in video games. And in the mid-noughties, I mean, people even today say that, you know, video games are too restrictive, but you're forgetting. In the mid-noughties, there wasn't even that many indie games, so you're dealing with either AAA stuff or maybe a few scattered things that came from the internet. And, of course, retro games. And so this is one of the few scattered things that came from the internet, and it was fun and it was enjoyable, but it also was like a breath, like a great big breath. And rather than explain the whole things, I'm just going to play the intro just to get us in the mood and have a feel about it. Was intro one from the game Cloud, which was originally developed by University of Southern California students. Cloud is a beautiful game. Essentially, you are a kid with asthma in a hospital bed, great start, who's basically trying to imagine a world much better, and he imagines himself flying through the sky, a great beautiful world out there. And that's how the game begins. You're a kid, you're way up in the sky, you're swooping through the air, and you gradually develop the mechanics, which are basically grabbing pieces of cloud and moving them from place to place. Now, to be honest, I could talk a bit more about the game mechanics, and the game mechanics are okay, and I mean, like in every game, there's a bit of a problem, because you want to create this whole atmospheric environment, but at the same time, at the end, you also have to create something that so the players actually have to do. So what happens if they're too focused on what they have to do? They don't quite appreciate the environment. And Cloud just deals with this by, for a start, the what you have to do is kind of a bit slow and relaxing and involves something like grabbing up these clouds and moving them from place to place. But more importantly, it just overwhelms us with the atmosphere. When you get started into the actual game, you deal with some very beautiful music. And I just got to play another track from this. This, I believe, is from the third level in the game. There's only four levels. You play through it very quickly. It's a free PC downloadable title. But once you do, you find yourself swooping through with the bright blue sky above you and the deep blue sea below you and a few islands and buildings here and there. And, of course, the white fluffy clouds as they go go through the air. And then you can even press and hold, and while most of the game you fly around at a level, you can even press and hold the middle mouse button, and then suddenly go swooping up and down and soaring and down and right near the ocean and back up again, and it's just beautiful. That was the background music for Cloud Level. As I said, it's a beautiful game. You can collect up clouds and you drop the clouds down and you can build up a great big group of clouds. That's a mechanic that's going to come in useful later on in these games. But of course, at one stage you build up a bunch of white clouds and you crash them into a bunch of black clouds and they suddenly thunder and all this rain comes down. It's all very atmospheric and beautiful. And in the mid-noughties, that was just a very beautiful thing to have. Now, the people who developed this game, they didn't want to just stop it at that. And so pretty much around about the time they were graduating, they formed That Game Company. Yes, one word. It's kind of a silly title. But anyway, and they managed to form That Game Company. And what do you know? Sony, who I actually have to give credit where credit's due. While I wasn't keen of them during the PlayStation era because they tended to way down on two-dimensional video games, they always have tended to appreciate art a little more since then. And I mean, that can be seen today with their efforts in indie game things, but back then Sony actually gave That Game Company a three game deal. So essentially since then That game company has gone on to make three more games. They've all pretty much been released on the Sony platform, and they've all been memorable in some way or another, always grabbing attention and getting people playing it and providing experiences that aren't really that common in other games. So it's great that it's kind of the great story. A bunch of students create a great bit of music. A great video game. It does something different. It gets attention, and now they're hitting the big time with creating more games that attract a lot of other people. I'll be covering those three games, one game per episode for the next while. So please stay tuned. And yes, for once, I'm giving you an incentive to actually tune into the next show, because I'll be covering the next one in their series is Flow, which was their first game produced under Sony. It's based on a Flash game that one of the developers there had already released. And so I hope you stay tuned and have a listen. Alright, so we're getting to the end of our show now, unfortunately. I think the best way to fade out is just to play one more track from this great game and leave it at that. So, this has been David Collins with BitNote. I hope you've enjoyed the selection of music that we've had on playing here. I certainly have. And I wish you all the best. This has been David Collins with BitNote. Thank you for listening.